From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made on a campaign bus that left downstate yesterday. It's making its way across the state and into Rochester today. It's the campaign of Zephyr Teachout, who's running as a Democrat against Governor Andrew Cuomo. The primary now less than 2 weeks away. And Teachout, along with her lieutenant governor candidate, Tim Wu, started off together yesterday before parting and hitting separate cities and places over the next 24 hours. Well, Zephyr Teachout entered this race as a long shot with very little name recognition across New York State. She might still be a long shot, but her campaign thinks they have a chance for a number of reasons now. And Zephyr Teachout joins me once again on Connections. Zephyr, nice to have you back on the program. Thanks for taking the time.
Thrilled to be on again. So, yes, we have had an extraordinary week. We really have, or 2 weeks, really. You know, I got the Sierra Club endorsement this week, the National Organization for Women endorsement, Public Employees Federation, and then the New York Times did not, in fact, endorse me, but said many flattering things about the real need for corruption and reform in Albany, and that's really been the thing that I've been fighting for the last 10 years. We're looking for a win in 12 days. It's going to be the upset of the century, but it's looking very strong for our campaign.
Well, the New York Times chose not to endorse you or Governor Cuomo. They did endorse your running mate, Tim Wu, for lieutenant governor. You know, some will say, look, an endorsement's an endorsement, and withdrawing from the process is not an endorsement. But do you look at it as a kind of a de facto endorsement of your candidacy?
People read it that way. They certainly said that people, if they want to lodge a protest against Andrew Cuomo, might consider voting for me. But, you know, I think people know by now that I'm running to win this, and we have had such extraordinary support. The New York Times just 2 weeks ago did another story asking Andrew Cuomo to debate me. So their coverage has been really glowing. And Andrew Cuomo has yet to answer the call to a debate. And it's starting to become very embarrassing for him. Actually, we're getting more supporters because there's a sense that it's a basic obligation of democracy to have a debate in a Democratic primary.
All right. Now, you've said, you know, that you're running as a real progressive, not a politician, not someone who carefully crafts every message, and I think people understand that. So let me ask you a question that I hope you will feel compelled to give us the most pure answer you can. You entered this race, when you entered this race, that day compared to now,
yeah.
What's the difference in what you actually thought about your chances of winning? I'm not talking about making a dent or getting a message. I'm talking about winning.
Right. Well, no, we did. I thought very seriously about entering, and at the time, I'll answer straightforwardly. I thought my chances were about 1 in 20 when I initially entered, and that seemed worth it, because I've always been running to win. I just had a longer odds at that time. Now, I don't know if I could put a number on it. We're looking at the numbers I'll give you is 350. We think with 350,000 votes, I will win because of the number of people who show up in a Democratic primary. And what we see is that people who know about my campaign, who learn that there's a woman running for governor, who's serious, who's traditional Democrat, who's progressive, who cares about schools, they get very excited. Actually, our main challenge has been name recognition, honestly. I mean, that's the truth. A lot of candidates have a challenge of trying to persuade voters that their ideas are better, but our challenge is just letting people know that there's a serious alternative.
Zephyr
and we're overcoming that challenge every day. I mean, the press coverage this last week has been amazing. And you know what's so interesting is so much of it comes from our own supporters, calling the press, saying you have to cover this race. Because Democrats who pay attention have really noticed that Andrew Cuomo hasn't been governing as a Democrat. You know, he didn't campaign for other Democrats. He's been more of a trickle-down Republican in a lot of ways.
Zephyr Teachout is my guest, not for the full hour, for roughly half an hour, and that'll give us a chance to talk about some of these issues. She's been on a very busy campaign upstate. I should let our listeners know, Rob Astorino is going to be coming on this program soon. Governor Andrew Cuomo has not committed to come on this program, but he has an open invitation, and we hope that he will join us at some point in the near future, because as we head towards these election days, we want to give our listeners a chance to interact with all of the candidates. So Zephyr Teachout is a Fordham law professor running in the Democratic primary on September 9th. It's two Tuesdays away. Tell us about your day in Rochester. I know you're sort of already off and running again, but tell us what you've been doing in Rochester.
Well, we had a really wonderful event at the Village Gate Square this morning at 9. And I'd say 75, maybe 80 people were there, extremely enthusiastic. I'm in the middle of our whistleblower tour. We're doing a three-day whistleblower tour of New York State, blowing the whistle on all of the ways in which the corruption in Albany is having a real impact on people's lives. So, you know, one of the themes of the campaign and what I see in Albany is that there's a lot of legal bribery or illegal bribery that you hear about in the scandals, but the real concern, the real thing that is hurting our government is actually the legal corruption when campaign contributions end up directing policy. So we're focusing on different things in different areas. And in Rochester, I talked about fracking. I'm opposed to fracking, but I really focused on education because, you know, there's a real crisis of education in Rochester. The graduation rates are extremely low, as you know. And what I see is that Governor Andrew Cuomo has really taken money from school funding to pay for the tax breaks for campaign donors, for big banks. But we got into the weeds a little bit. We talked about Common Core and my thoughts about Common Core. I'm opposed to it. And we talked about really a vision of what a great public education would look like. And then we talked a little bit about high-stakes testing more broadly. So it was a wonderful event. The response was outstanding. I was very excited to be there.
Listeners, if you want to join the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, to talk to Zephyr Teachout. Now, Zephyr, you mentioned Common Core. I know you've been touring different parts of New York State. Syracuse.com wrote about your stop in upstate, and they talked about the ways that you differ with Governor Cuomo. And one thing that people are not totally clear on is whether you differ all that much on Common Core. I mean, I know that you say you are opposed to Common Core, but there are things that the state governments have to do to make sure they maintain certain levels of federal funding. And so what would you, if you're elected governor when it comes to Common Core, does New York State essentially scrap it? Do you direct an education department to rework things? What can you actually tangibly do with it?
Well, I think we should halt it, and I would do everything I can to halt it. So one of the things I have written about is starting with leading a delegation of parents and teachers to Washington to say we can't afford to have Common Core here in New York State. So what can we do? Can we build our own standards and so we don't lose federal funding? And we'll see what Washington's response is. I mean, that's the start. Is you really want an advocate for parents and teachers, and that is not something that Governor Andrew Cuomo has been. He has not been outspoken against Common Core, and in fact, you know, the few changes that he made this spring in terms of how it affected teacher evaluation, he made after I entered the race. And I can't say that my entering the race made a difference, but I can say that the outrage of parents and teachers about the impact of Common Core and the impact of high-stakes testing, which my race is really tapped into, may have been part of that calculus, because his own agenda didn't start with being a leader and really using his bully pulpit to say, this is hurting our kids. Not every child is the same. We can't have the same prescription for every child. You know, I was talking to somebody in Buffalo last night, and she had a wonderful analogy. She said, if you went to the doctor, and 100 different kids went to the doctor, and no matter what they showed up with, a broken leg or a stuffy nose, they got the exact same prescription, you'd say they were a terrible doctor. But that is what we're doing with Common Core. And it's encouraging this, you know, worksheet-based school, taking all the creativity out of teachers, taking all the creativity out of school. And I feel very strongly that no matter what the theory of Common Core is, what we've seen is in practice it leads to a culture of testing.
Before we get to the phones, and they're already lighting up for with our listeners wanting to talk to Zephyr Teachout, who has been in Rochester today as part of her upstate campaign tour leading up to the September 9th primary, I want to mention that you have a book on corruption that's out. What is it, out a couple days ago, isn't it? Is that right? Hold on, Zephyr. I lost just for 1 second there. Our audio dropped. Yes. There you are. Go ahead. So the book on corruption. Go ahead.
I believe yesterday, although, you know, these days with book publishing, it's just what it means to come out means different things.
Okay, but the bottom line is you've written about corruption all the way back to Benjamin Franklin, in fact. What's the story there?
Well, what I was really interested in is what corruption has meant at different times, particularly in law. You know, when the Supreme Court said it's not corrupt when big donors write big checks, that's what actually started my research. And I ended up being cited, my early research was cited in the Supreme Court in dissent in Citizens United. I think Citizens United was a terrible decision. But what I got really interested in is the Constitutional Convention and how much they talked about corruption and the ideas they had for responding to corruption. And what worries me is one of the things they're really focused on is when power gets so concentrated that they called it the problem of placemen, when parliamentarians were basically dependent on the king in England because they relied on the king for their, you know, for their salaries. What worries me is that power is concentrated in that way in New York in some ways, that we have the most powerful governor of all the 50 states with more budgetary power, more power to appoint to commissions. And unfortunately, Andrew Cuomo has used that power in a way to shut out debate. I think he thought he could shut out debate and not have a primary. So I see some of the same patterns appearing over and over again in history, and I think it's helpful to look to history to see how in the past we've responded to these problems. Because money in politics wasn't invented in 1970. Money in politics is as old as politics itself.
Let's grab a couple calls and let's try to keep it moving because we don't have Zephyr for the hour. So let's go as quickly as we can. David, Pittsford, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I think you need a primary debate, and I think that Astorino would be a good stand-in for Cuomo since they're...
Well, that's sort of happening, isn't it?
And so I'd like you to invite him to debate during the primaries as opposed to the elections.
Zephyr, that's sort of happening, isn't it?
David, you're exactly right. I'm hoping we get a primary debate with Andrew Cuomo, but we are debating Rob Astorino next Thursday, I guess a week from today. And when I'm debating Rob Astorino, I'll be debating some of Andrew Cuomo's core policies because there's so many ways in which they're similar. I mean, they're both pretty traditional Republicans in the Reagan tradition. They both believe that tax breaks are the way to do economic development. And, you know, upstate, you should know by now that that is not working. So I am actually doing exactly what you suggest. And thank you for the call. I hope you listen into it.
It's a week from today. I think it's on Brian Lehrer's show in New York City, which is Public Radio New York City. It's, you know, as we go along here, this will be a good model for debates. If they're harder to get, maybe public radio is a good place to go do them. And so
that's wonderful. Yeah. And I hope that we get it replayed everywhere so people can listen to it.
Now, you mentioned tax cuts. The business community will tell you that they still believe New York State is last or second last in the country in terms of business climate, attracting new business. And they say it's because taxes are too high. You have said that Governor Cuomo is obsessed with tax cuts, especially for the wealthiest. So that flies in the face a little bit of what we hear from Unshackle Upstate, other groups that are that are aligned with the business community. And they're concerned that a Zephyr Teachout administration would have trouble attracting new business to the state.
Well, when we talk about business community, we have to be very clear about which business community. A core of my campaign and Tim Wu's campaign is supporting a small business economy, making sure that every entrepreneur, small business owner can get a fair chance. And when Rob Astorino talks about the business community or Andrew Cuomo talks about the business community, far too often they're talking about a very small club, a few companies that have amassed extraordinary power that are basically, you know, like monopolies, like the old railroads, like the old big banks. And Tim and I believe that it's essential for a thriving small business economy to take on that concentrated power directly. You know, we're old-fashioned trust busters in the Teddy Roosevelt FDR line. And I think it's really important because small business owners have been left out. They've been left behind by both, you know, certainly by the Republican Party. But, you know, to some degree, some Democrats can forget how important small business owners are. And so we've spent a lot of our campaign talking to them about how can we support you? How can we figure out a way to stop the shrinking number of small businesses, family farms, sustainable farms, immigrant entrepreneurs, which have been the heart of New York's economy for a long time. How can we stop that shrinking part of that economy?
Let's get some more calls. This is John in the city of Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Zephyr. You know, the corruption of Andrew Cuomo at this Moreland Commission really is, it's a huge issue. And I'll tell you, the other guy, if you get elected governor, Eric Snyderman's involved with this Moreland Commission too, from what I understand. And the third rail, I'm not sure how much influence he had on the Moreland Commission, but Sheldon Silver, how are you going to deal with that corrupt politician once you get elected?
It's a true old boys club there. I mean, it really is. And, you know, the first thing is shining a light on it and telling the truth and being very clear about where I stand and not representing big donors. That's the first step, because I can't promise you. I'm not going to make you any false promises. I'm not going to promise you that on day one we're going to clean up this real culture of corruption and secrecy in Albany. But I can tell you that there's a lot of tools that the governor has. It's one of the most powerful governors, so we can take that moment and say, let's actually pass public financing in elections, because the core problem here is how campaigns are funded.
Zephyr Teachout, my guest here on Connections. She's running against Governor Andrew Cuomo. Zephyr, on this program, we had State Senator Ted O'Brien earlier this week. We've had the mayor of Rochester, Lovely Warren. And when you ask them about Governor Cuomo, they said he's done nice things for upstate. They're going to support him. They did not mention Moreland in their comments. There's not a lot of Democrats talking about Moreland. And there aren't
a
lot of...
That's part of the problem. I mean, you know, there's one thing. When the Moreland scandal came out, I mean, this is a real scandal. You have basically, these are deputized attorneys general, and you have Governor Andrew Cuomo's top aide telling these attorneys general what subpoenas to put out or what not to put out. This is a major scandal. But the bigger scandal is the silence in the wake of it, is the fact that more Democrats and Republicans are not speaking up. And that's the best evidence that we have a seriously broken system in Albany, and we need somebody absolutely new, an outsider, to come in and fix it up. And luckily, I'm an outsider who understands the system. I mean, I've been studying politics for a long time. I was the national director of an anti-corruption organization. I'm not new to politics, but we do need somebody new coming in.
And if our listeners missed the interview, for example, with State Senator Ted O'Brien, I asked him about his thoughts on the Moreland Commission. His thoughts reflected a lot of what Governor Cuomo said, which is that, yes, the governor's top aide did try to intervene, but it didn't really work, and the commission still went forward with what they had planned to do. So even though there was an attempted intervention, you know, the commission was still independent.
That doesn't pass the laugh test. I mean, that is saying that I tried witness tampering, but the witness refused to be tampered, so it wasn't witness tampering. I mean, this is the effort to intervene is itself the problem. And what's astonishing to me is that Governor Andrew Cuomo, how many weeks has it been now? Is it 6 weeks, I think?
Yeah, since something like that, since, yeah.
Yeah, 6 weeks yesterday, maybe, that Governor Andrew Cuomo still hasn't answered the most basic question, which is, did he direct his top aide or not? So we actually still, as New Yorkers, we still don't know what he was doing, what his own involvement was. And if he was directing his top aide to do this, that is saying there is one set of laws for Governor Andrew Cuomo's friends, because what he was saying about the subpoenas is basically don't put out subpoenas when they're close business associates of Andrew Cuomo's. There's one set of laws for his business associates and friends, and there's another set of laws for the rest of us, and that is a fundamental betrayal of public trust.
Well, we're certainly hoping that Governor Cuomo will come on this program, and again, for our listeners, it's an open invitation. The governor staff knows it. They've acknowledged that. They've told us that they're going to try to find time that might work, and we hope that we'll be able to do that. Before we get to sort of a quick little lightning round of phone calls before Zephyr has to go, Zephyr Teachout on the phone with us. Let me at least ask you, as we head toward Labor Day here, you talk about the fact that Democrats in New York State have largely stayed silent about Moreland, et cetera. Well, if you are the progressive candidate who will be on the side of labor, who is concerned that the current leadership is too obsessed with tax cuts for the wealthy, et cetera, why don't we see even more labor backing your candidacy and opposing the governor, if you're correct about that.
Well, we've gotten a lot of momentum with labor in the last few weeks. I mean, the Yonkers firefighters came out, the Public Employees Federation came out, and you know, just as importantly, I would have loved their endorsement, but the AFL and NYSIT both declined to endorse Governor Andrew Cuomo, and that's a serious rebuke. In terms of the membership, I will tell you, rank-and-file members, when they learn about my campaign, are supportive. But, you know, let's be honest. Andrew Cuomo has the capacity to really punish some of the unions if they come out against him. So it may be that they are choosing not to take a stand endorsing me because they want to avoid that punishment.
And my last question for you before we get to our quick round of phone calls is, I debated with our listeners a little bit on Twitter a week or two ago. You were on with Fred Dicker downstate, and he asked a question that I said on Twitter I did not think was appropriate, but we had a lot of listeners say they did think it was appropriate.
Okay.
And the question was, if you don't win, will you support Governor Cuomo? My response to that was, when you have ostensible long-shot candidates, you diminish their candidacy by immediately asking, well, hey, if you don't win, what are you going to do? As opposed to saying, let's talk about substantive policy. But we had listeners tell us that there are some sort of disaffected Democrats who do want to know if there is a feeling that Governor Cuomo will be supported beyond the primary, if he ends up prevailing here. And they did seem to care very much about your position on that. So I guess I ask on their behalf, without trying to diminish whatsoever this conversation's about before September 9th, what are your thoughts going forward if you don't end up winning?
Yeah, well, I want to speak directly to your listeners on that. I take your position, and I'm quite serious about it, and I think it's very important. You know, nobody's asking Andrew Cuomo what he's going to do when he loses in 12 days. And what I think is really important is to keep in mind the potential of the next 12 days. I think people know where I stand on the core issues, and they can look at my entire record and say that I've always voted on principle, and they can decide for themselves what they think might happen. But the key is we are about to have the upset of the century. We have a potential to change New York state government right now in the next 12 days. And I would ask your listeners who were asking that to look at this potential and to reach out to their friends and say, we have an opportunity here to ban fracking. We have an opportunity here to return to our traditional democratic roots, and let's take that opportunity. So I'm sorry, I'm also not going to answer that question directly because I'm planning to win.
That's fair enough. And again, I shared my thoughts on the quality of the question to begin with. But there we have an answer for the listeners who wanted that one. Real quickly, Rob, Pittsford, go ahead with Zephyr Teachout.
Hi. My question is this. You know, in terms of talking about corruption and how that's become part of the Cuomo administration, it strikes me that for a lot of people thinking about the corruption in politics, it may be hard to help them understand why that relates directly to their quality of life. They may be saying, well, perhaps this politician's corrupt, but no more so than anyone else. And if they're getting the job done for me, I'm not so concerned about the ends that they use or the means that they use to get to justifiable ends. How do you frame those sorts of issues in a way that people realize is directly connected to their quality of life?
Thanks, Rob, for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. You know, that's actually exactly what the tour is about, is that we are connecting issues to each other. So I was at a nursing home the other day that is a Valley View nursing home that there's an effort to privatize. And what I was trying to show people, and they really responded, is the reason that they're privatizing this really important part of the community, the nursing home, this nursing home that has two-thirds of the people in it are low-income seniors who really need the public support. The reason for that is the law firm that's pushing to privatize them is a major campaign player, a major player in Albany, and in fact filed a lawsuit to try to limit the scope of the Moreland Commission. And so my job, there's a lot of different jobs of leadership, and one of the jobs of leadership is just explaining what's actually happening, is to say, actually, the reason politicians aren't doing their job is because of big money. The reason we have such overcrowded schools and underfunded schools is not an act of nature, and it's not even an act of where New Yorkers want to be. It's because of big banks who are basically funding Andrew Cuomo's political career.
And Edward and Henrietta wanted to ask on Common Core. Go ahead, Edward.
Yes, hello. Usually when people talk about the Common Core, there is a confusion of two different issues. The Common Core is simply a set of standards. And most people, as I know, are against the implementation, not the set of standards per se. And my understanding from what I just heard, that your guest is against the set of standards itself. So just for you to know, it's just the minimum requirements, not something that we have to have all A students to know. It's all C students should know that because it's just the minimum. Thank you.
Edward, thank you. So clarification, Zephyr, are you against the implementation or the actual standards themselves?
Thank you for the caller. I am against both. I think if we have standards in New York State, they should be developed along with parents and teachers actually creating those standards. And with the existing Common Core, the standards are really developed by Gates, you know, by a very wealthy individual. And he spent over $200 million really pushing them onto the schools. So there's some elements that are useful to teachers. And I've talked to teachers who found some of them very useful, and I have no objection to teachers using them when they are useful. But the standards, I believe, should come from our own community, not from wealthy individuals pushing them on our schools.
Last listener, quick question, comes via email. Someone is asking, will you please ask Zephyr if she will support including state-operated community residential group homes for the current list of 20,000 people with developmental disabilities who are on the waiting list?
You know, I don't have a policy position on exactly that, and it's something that we're working on, and I thank the caller for the question. What I do see across the board is that there isn't enough funding for New Yorkers with developmental disabilities, and it's something that's extremely important. The particular methods and the best way to support those New Yorkers is something that I'm looking at and want to develop policies around, and thank you for the call, because important area.
We'd like to have Tim Wu and Kathy Hochul on this program. Tell Tim that we'd love to find him, and I'm going to send an email his way, Zephyr, and we'd love to have him on as well, because that's an interesting race in and of itself as well, and I know your running mate is a busy guy as well. We'll talk net neutrality and more with him, and I hope you'll pass the message on.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having us on the show. Thank your listeners for the wonderful questions, as always, asking about the real issues that are affecting people. And if you're interested in following our campaign or even better helping out, we're at teachoutwoo.com. Look forward to seeing you on the campaign trail.
Teachoutwoo.com. Zephyr, I know you're busy. Thanks for taking the time for us on Connections.
Thank you so much.
Zephyr Teachout is running for governor in the Democratic primary on September 9th, spending the several days this week on an upstate campaign tour. She was in Rochester, and you're wondering, why is she on the phone? She was in Rochester this morning, and has the bus is already moving on. It's just been a very, very busy day for them, and they had, I think, 9 stops yesterday. So she was nice enough with her time to join us by phone. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. And we'll be happy to take more of your calls, because we're going to talk to some folks on the political campaign trail who've been following this campaign now, not only about what they're seeing on the campaign, but we'll also hear more about what Zephyr Teachout has to say about her lieutenant governor candidate, who did get the New York Times endorsement this week that a lot of people are talking about. So short break, more of your calls, comments, questions, and we'll talk with some folks covering the campaign next. Coming up in our second hour, science says that you almost certainly still love the music from your teenage years. Why is that? More than any other time, our teenage years form our passion for certain songs. And yes, there's a scientific explanation. So we're going to cue up some music and welcome a panel to talk about the powerful psychology of music next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WXXI FM HD2 Rochester. Go public online with WXXI.org.
Hi, it's David Green from NPR's Morning Edition. On Tuesday, September 9th, I will be in Rochester with Planet Money's Robert Smith for NPR Presents Family Matters in partnership with the University of Rochester. Please join me and my guests in Hatch Recital Hall for an unconventional discussion about college, home ownership, retirement, and your financial lifetime. Space is limited, so please reserve your seat today at wxxi.org/events.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. We'd love to hear from you on what you just heard from Democratic candidate for Governor Zephyr Teachout. You can join the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994, at Evan Dawson on Twitter. Tried to cover as much ground as we could there. And so we're going to welcome a couple of folks now. In studio with me is Michelle Faust, WXXI reporter, who was out there at that campaign stop today. Nice to see you as always.
Yes, nice to see you.
And on the phone with us, we have Connor Skelding. Connor is a reporter for Capital New York who has been, Connor, you've been, I guess you've been on the bus every stop in the last couple of days. Is that correct?
That is.
All right. So one of the things that people were asking was, hey, how come Zephyr isn't in studio? How come she's on the phone? She was in Rochester today. Well, they had a lot of stops yesterday, and I know there was a lot going on today. Give me a sense for what yesterday's schedule looked like and just the challenge of the campaign bus just to get around. I mean, I know it was a long day.
Well, it was. I'd say that yesterday's schedule was tight, verging on overbooked. We took longer than expected leaving Manhattan, and that sort of set us off on the wrong foot. An hour late to two stops, and another one canceled entirely.
And Connor, give me also a sense for the fact that this is a campaign, as Zephyr Teachout told us on this program earlier in this hour. You know, she gave herself maybe a 5% chance of winning when she got in the race. She knew that it was a long shot. Now she's getting much more serious about it. And I wonder if that packed schedule is a result of more interest. Did you get that sense on the road that there is more interest than there would have been, say, 6-8 weeks ago?
You know, it varied from stop to stop. Some of them seemed like they were more photo opportunities for local TV stations, and there weren't many supporters. But at one stop yesterday in Binghamton, 20 people did wait the hour that we were delayed, and they were very excited, especially when Zephyr announced the endorsement of Matt Ryan, a beloved former mayor of the town.
So yesterday you ended up going all the way from Manhattan to, where did you end up last night?
Well, last night we ended up in Rochester. Zephyr took off to make an event in Buffalo, and she stayed the night there and then met back up this morning at the Village Gate Square with us.
These kind of events, you know, and I know you haven't done that many, all that many campaigns, Connor, but these kind of events, when you're doing that many events, it is so difficult for any politician to be on time. We used to joke that Chuck Schumer and George Pataki would be late to their own breakfast. I mean, it's just really amazing. And so that's sort of a symptom of the campaign. But, you know, if you overpack it like that, give me a sense for what you saw on the road. Are people receptive to that? Are they okay with that? Do they understand?
Well, a staffer did say that Elmira was angry. That was the stop that we missed yesterday. The campaign was going to the church. Apparently there were some missed people there who had waited around.
So they had to cancel a stop, and again, a symptom of a campaign that has maybe more interest than they anticipated. It's also a campaign that doesn't have a whole lot of money, and you know, that's one of the themes that Zephyr Teachout's been talking about. We're going to get to our phone calls in just a second. So Charlie and others, if you're waiting to talk, hang in there. We'll get to you in just a second. Michelle Faust, you were covering the event for us this morning here in Rochester. Zephyr Teachout described it, but what's your take on kind of what unfolded this morning in Rochester?
Well, she gave a pretty long speech just talking about how she feels very similar to the things that she covered over the first part of this hour, talking about fracking, talking about Common Core, and a lot of, you know, comparisons, I'll say, to herself and Governor Cuomo. And it does seem like she's talking a lot about the historic, if she were to win, that it would be very historic to have an Asian American and a woman on the ticket. And a lot of conversation about those things. It seemed like there was a lot of support in the Rochester area, but a good percentage was media that was also there.
Was media there. So, yeah, she said there were 75, 80 people there. Is that roughly correct, you think?
That sounds correct. I wonder how that compares, Connor, to the other stops.
Well, you know, it depends. In Binghamton, I'd say there were 3 cameras and 2 print reporters. In New York City, a large part of the city press corps came out for her first stop at 157.
Yeah, so as Michelle said, a lot of media. But, you know, it's interesting. We're not even to Labor Day weekend yet. And often we talk about the summer doldrums. You know, people are on vacation. They're not paying attention to politics. And in an election year, the joke is it starts after Labor Day, people paying attention. But the primary is the day, 2 days, you know, or a week after Labor Day, Michelle.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I stayed a little bit after, and before she came, she was a little bit late, and before she came, many of the supporters came up and spoke before she came in. And one thing that I noticed is, you know, 80 people approximately, that could be a large group, that could be a small group, depending on what you're comparing it to. But the people that were out are very... they're very enthusiastic about her and about this campaign. Most of those people have negative things to say about Cuomo. They are not happy with his leadership so far. But, you know, a lot of these people are very excited about some of the things that she's saying, especially against fracking.
All right, let me grab Charlie, who's been waiting to talk. And then after we talk to Charlie, Michelle has grabbed a few sound cuts from this morning. We'll talk about that in just a second. Here's Charlie. Thanks for calling Connections. Charlie, you're on.
Evan, I'm calling in regards to Ms. Teachout's position on the legalization of marijuana. I'm particularly curious if she, as Mario Cuomo, considers marijuana a gateway drug, which, according to the medical definition, it really is not. I think tobacco and alcohol are far more common as far as preceding the use of harder drugs. So I'm just wondering what her position on it is on that, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Charlie, thanks for the call, and a couple of points on this. Number one, he mentioned Mario Cuomo. He conflated Andrew and Mario. He meant Andrew. Andrew Cuomo has said on multiple occasions that he considers marijuana a gateway drug. Every time this comes up in this program, and Michelle, I can tell you, I get off the air, and I've got voicemail from angry listeners who are really angry when we talk about marijuana in these terms. But let me give you just scientific facts. This has been studied all the way back to the Clinton administration. As Dr. Luke Pappone told us once again yesterday on this program, the scientific evidence is that in terms of however you describe a gateway drug, marijuana is not a gateway drug, that causation is not correlation. So here's a headline, Charlie, and I'm trying to search real quickly. Zephyr Teachout slammed the medical marijuana deal that happened this year. And here's what Zephyr Teachout had to say about the deal that Governor Cuomo helped strike earlier this year. Quote from Zephyr Teachout: "The result of this is a confusing patchwork of punitive marijuana laws. Our state is the worst for marijuana arrests in the nation and overwhelmingly punishes working-class New Yorkers of color. Although the deal is a step forward, it's unconscionable that Governor Cuomo continues to play politics with an issue that could bring immediate relief to sick and vulnerable New Yorkers. He argued that any greater step forward would be unsafe, but the current laws are unsafe. They lead to suffering and senseless incarceration." Now, Teachout did not go on to endorse full-scale legalization, as we've seen in Washington State and Colorado, but she said that the deal for medical marijuana is too restrictive, that she would not ban the smoking of it, she would make it a little bit more widely available to doctors, and that she thinks the governor played politics with it. So I'm trying to read from her site and give Charlie an idea of where Zephyr Teachout stands on that issue. Now, this morning, and we've got Connor Skelding on the line with us from Capital New York, a reporter for Capital New York. Michelle Faust is in studio with us. Michelle, this morning, Zephyr Teachout talked about a number of things here. And I'd leave it up to you, because I know you've pulled a bunch for us here to kind of digest. Go ahead.
Well, most of the things that were talked about, the three main things, aside from the comparisons to Cuomo, were her being against fracking, she talked about being a trust buster. She made a lot of comparisons to herself and the two Roosevelts. She talked about renewables underneath fracking, talked a lot about how her support for Wu and how that's supposed to be. It would be historical if the two of them were to win, and a lot about being against the Common Core.
Can we listen to what she said about Tim Wu? I'd like to do that, because then I'm going to raise an interesting scenario here. But let's listen, if we could, to what Zephyr Teachout said about her running mate, Timothy Wu. Oh, we don't have one. John, if it exists, it's 06053. And to the extent that we can grab that, we'll grab that in just a second here. Let me pose an interesting idea here, and I'll ask Connor the same question. There is a possibility that Tim Wu wins the lieutenant governor primary on September 9th, defeats Kathy Hochul, but Andrew Cuomo defeats Zephyr Teachout. They're not running as a package on the primary ballot. That's not how it works. Connor, wouldn't that be an interesting thing to see Governor Cuomo have to run with Timothy Wu?
I think that would be an interesting thing. Mr. Wu has said that he will run with Governor Cuomo if that's what the voters decide on primary day.
And Michelle, you know, I think a lot of voters aren't aware that that's an actual possibility and that this sort of forced marriage would happen, because then if you move through the primary this way, then they do go on the ballot together as a team in the general election in November.
A lot of speculation in the newsroom this morning about whether or not that was a possibility based on this endorsement by the New York Times of Timothy Wu. And apparently there's a precedent that has happened before in the state of New York.
All right, so let's listen this morning to what Zephyr Teachout said about her running mate, Timothy Wu.
Tim Wu has an amazing history, and he absolutely deserves the endorsement, and he's going to be an extraordinary lieutenant governor. I picked him because I know he can win. We're going to have the first female governor and the first Asian American to be elected statewide. All we need in this campaign is for more people to know about it and more Democratic primary voters to know about it.
So Connor Skelding is a reporter who was on the bus all day yesterday with them. They traveled together for a while yesterday and then split up. What happened, Connor?
Well, what happened was there was an event in Buffalo, and we were going to be late for it. And so Zephyr, they left in a sedan, and they made it. I mean, they were late, but they had the event, and Zephyr said it went well. Then they met us back this morning in Rochester.
So it's the number to call the show here is toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Are you engaged? Are you following this campaign? And if so, you know, what are your thoughts on the state of the race? I'm very curious to hear just exactly what people are thinking about this state of the race here. But, you know, Michelle, a New York Times endorsement probably carries more weight even in a primary than it does in the general, because if you vote in the primary, you're probably really engaged. I mean, they're thinking between 500,000 and 1 million voters total for the primary. And, you know, that's not a huge number. If you missed it earlier in this program, Zephyr Teachout said their target number is 350,000 votes. That's what they think they need to win on September 9th. And Connor, did she tell you the same thing on the campaign trail yesterday? I mean, that's what the campaign's kind of settled on as their target, huh?
That's what she's been saying. And I got to say, it was electric here when the endorsement came in. I think she thinks that that's actually going to rub up on her. And she actually thinks that the non-endorsement of Cuomo is a victory in the same sort of way that the AFL-CIO's non-endorsement of Cuomo was.
But the AFL-CIO chose not to endorse Zephyr Teachout. And I know she says, look, they're sitting it out. They're not endorsing the governor. But sitting it out is sort of different than making an endorsement. And that's, you know, so it's an interesting dynamic. 350,000 votes doesn't seem like that much, Michelle. But on a primary day, that's a lot of number. That's a big number.
Well, and it really does come down to how many people show up for primaries. Usually primaries don't bring out as many voters as a general election. So that's why she keeps saying it really is in the hands of the voters to show up and to know that she's out there and that she exists. The New York Times endorsement really is a help because it just raises that visibility that's necessary for their campaign.
I see our engineer, John Andrews, taking another call, and he's handling that right now. Hey, John, real briefly, let's listen to what Zephyr Teachout said this morning about fracking. That's been a big theme on our upstate tour. Let's listen to that, and then we'll grab more of your calls.
It's toxic for an agricultural economy. But I also think it's going to get in the way of building the sustainable agriculture we need. I support wineries. I support actually investing in the growing agrotourism. We can't have agrotourism. We can't have wineries if we also have hydrofracking.
So that's what she said here in Rochester. Connor Skelding, has she been beating that same drum at other stops?
Fracking site in Montrose, Pennsylvania, four local fractivists, as they call themselves, guided the bus up onto a road that overlooked the site. And Zephyr and also Tim Wu spoke a little bit about fracking there.
Michelle, I guess she feels it's a safe issue for. I'm not saying she's choosing issues that she only thinks are safe, but she's very out in the open about it. You don't have to ask her to talk about it. She talks about that very voluntarily, doesn't she?
It's very true. She is very openly against fracking, and if she were to win, that would be something that would set her aside from Astorino, because he is very pro-fracking.
And the governor, we don't know.
And he doesn't talk about it. And that's one thing that she brought up many, many times was this criticism of the governor for not taking a stand on fracking one way or the other.
All right. Before we let Connor Skelding go, one more quick question. We've been following your reporting online, Connor, on Twitter and other sites there. Again, it's Capital New York where you write for. If people haven't checked out Capital New York, where do they find you online?
Well, it's pretty simple. It's at CapitalNewYorkAllSpelledOut.com.
Thanks for taking the time. I know you've been busy on the tour. I'm glad, at least for you on the bus, that it's a cooler day today. It was cooking yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, it was cooking and the AC was out.
Oh, the life of a campaign reporter. Connor, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Connor Skelding from Capital New York, who's been following the Teach Out campaign. So you're hearing a number of the comments from Zephyr Teach Out. And I want to play one more of her comments that we didn't get to in our conversation in our half hour with her on this program this hour. Michelle Faust, a WXXI reporter, was there this morning when Zephyr Teach Out stopped in Rochester. She talked about renewable energy as another prong of this. And sometimes people talk about that, and candidates talk about it, and it's more nebulous. So I'm curious to know just how specific she wants to get with it.
Well, she was talking about renewables and seeing that as a way to invest in the economy of New York, especially upstate New York. And really, I think it was 2030 that she gave as a projected year that we could really be a leader in renewables in the state of New York and really just use that instead of and have that as our main source of energy instead of using fossil fuels. And a lot of criticism saying that although Cuomo didn't make a statement on fracking, she sees him as a fossil fuel kind of guy.
All right, so let's listen to Teach Out on renewables.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with Stanford professor Mark Jacobson's effort to analyze New York and see how we could get to a 2030 renewable New York building solar and wind and water at the micro level. But we can do it, but it takes an investment and it takes a commitment and it takes a commitment away from fossil fuels.
Okay, again, so she's talking about solar, wind, water, and the question is just how quickly things are scalable. But, she is not afraid to hit these issues right now. She obviously feels like there's a vulnerability for Governor Cuomo there, Michelle.
Yeah, that was one thing that I haven't brought up. She did talk about Cuomo a lot in many different ways and just really kept beating the drum of what's going on with this Moreland Commission. And then just really questioning his leadership as far as fracking. And when it comes down to it, just thinking that he's not doing enough to reach out to renewables and new sources of energy and just going with the old standard of fossil fuels.
All right. So as we start to wrap up this hour, our thanks to Zephyr Teachout, the candidate for governor, for taking the time to come back on this program. Rob Astorino, early next month, will join us. Certainly the door is still open, and we are hoping that Governor Andrew Cuomo will join us on this program. He's had the invitation since December, and we hope that we will see him on this program as soon as we possibly can. It's our effort to bring the candidates to you in an accessible format. There have been questions about debate, and Governor Cuomo has not shown an interest in debating Zephyr Teachout before the primary on September 9th. So next week, Zephyr Teachout and Rob Astorino are going to debate on Brian Lehrer's show. That's in New York City on the public radio affiliate down there. So it's a week from today if you want to hear debate, but it won't be with Governor Andrew Cuomo. Michelle, before I let you go, you have a separate project that you've been working on for a while, and this is a good chance for me to have you remind our listeners what you've been working on.
That's right. We are trying to understand the Affordable Care Act, and that's the name of the project, Understanding the Affordable Care Act. If you have questions about health care, your health insurance, any kind of issues that you've had signing up for Obamacare with the exchange, we really want to hear from you. You can send us an email, acawxxi@wxxi.org, or give us a call, 585-258-2255. 0263. We want everyone to go online to WXXI.org and take our ACA survey link. It's a blue button on the corner of the page.
You can't miss it if you're really looking for it.
Yeah, you will definitely find it.
Do you think people have things to say about the ACA?
Oh, absolutely. I've spoken to many people already, and we've already been gathering many of those questions, and we'll be slowly rolling that on our website, on this program as well, Healthy Friday, and we will also have that on our Need to Know program. So lots and lots of things coming with affordable care and open enrollment coming in November.
It's a great project. You know, when it comes to media coverage of a complex issue like the Affordable Care Act, so often it's sort of relegated to 90 seconds on television or, you know, a few inches here and there. And it's just nice to let a project breathe, to have time to gather answers, to have depth with it. You see, I'm a cheerleader for what you're doing, but I think it's important. So
thank you.
Thank you for taking the time. Thanks for sharing your insight with us this hour. Nice to see you as always. Short break, and then we're coming back with a very different subject. Let me ask you a quick question. Whatever music you loved as a teenager, do you still love it today? If a song comes on that you loved when you were 16, science says you probably still love it, even if you admit it's pretty terrible. And there is a scientific reason for that. So next hour, we're going to mine the music of our childhoods with a great panel, and we're going to talk about the science of the music we love next.